Hi, thanks for tuning into this podcast. I'm Nora Rawlinson of Early Word. I'll be interviewing two authors today who write under the name Magnus Flight. Their book, City of Dark Magic, will be published on November 2nd. This is part of Penguin's First Flights program, which gives librarians an early introduction to some of the season's most promising debut authors. If you're not a participant, you can sign up here on earlyword.com. So, I said we have two authors writing under the name of Magnus Flight. Their real names are Meg Howry and Christina Lynch. Welcome, Chris and Meg.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
I'm excited about the challenge of interviewing two people at once, but given that you've gone through the process of writing a novel together, I kind of assume that you're good at handing off things to each other, so I'm not too worried. So I have to start by saying, why did the two of you decide to write a novel together?
Well, Chris and I, this is Meg speaking, Chris and I met at a writer's retreat and just really liked each other's writing and became friends. And we both live in California. I live about 3.5 hours south of Chris. And I would go up and visit Chris every couple of weeks and just hang out. And the idea to write together, it really started almost as a joke or a game. We had an idea. We took a long hike and tossed around some ideas, and it was still sort of fun. I wasn't thinking that we were that serious until I got the first chapter from Chris about a month later.
So, Chris, what made you serious about it?
I think when I thought about it, you know, we all talk about, you know, writing as a lonely profession, which I think, you know, people can exaggerate the loneliness of it, but it's certainly solitary, and it's always exciting to find a good reader to give you feedback. So the idea of writing something together and getting instant feedback was really appealing, but we didn't, you know, we couldn't physically sit side by side, and I don't think we would have wanted to do that. So doing alternating chapters in a relay just really made sense to me and seemed like a lot of fun. And in fact, it was.
So Meg, when you got the first chapter, what was your response?
Well, the first chapter was hilarious, and I expected nothing less from Chris. I'm a big fan of her writing. She also included very helpfully some rules for our project. We talked about chapter length, which Chris had decided very wisely. We were aiming for between 3 and 14 pages per chapter on the idea that that's about as much as any tired person can read at the end of the day before falling asleep. And that was very helpful in terms of keeping up pace. And we wanted to keep some of our shared loves for arcane history in there and keep it sexy, keep it fun, and most importantly, no rewriting until we got to the end.
Now, there is an astounding thought. No rewriting until you finish the novel?
Yeah, every writer that we tell that to is kind of blown away by that idea, because, of course, we all love to obsessively go back and revise. But I felt that it would be more fun to just go for it and see what a story would look like. I was thinking about, you know, how Charles Dickens published his novels, and I read that he didn't necessarily know where he was going, and the first chapters were already in print and in the hands of his readers. So it was a little bit like that. It was a fun game, and the idea that you couldn't go back was a big part of it.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the thing about the decision to make the chapters short. One of the things I really enjoyed in the book was the pacing, and it's 66 chapters, I realized when I came to the end of the book, and each one of them was this nice little chunk. I love the image of what a tired person can read before they go to sleep. I have to say, you kept me up beyond my tiredness. But there was a nice sense of energy. So you were sending these chapters back and forth to each other?
Yes. And yes. We did it we didn't always know, well, I would say we almost never knew what was coming. I would leave Chris with some sort of cliffhanger, and I had no idea how that was going to be resolved. So it was sort of, here, you figure it out. And she never failed to surprise and entertain me and come up with some brilliant solution. And so that was part of the fun, too. And it kept our pace up, and it kept us really invested in our characters.
So let's talk about this story. It's a story that many librarians will relate to, because it involves people who are basically archivists. They're putting together information about this collection, amazing collection of art in Prague, and particularly this young woman, Sarah Weston, who goes to Prague to work on this collection. And then Sarah shows up and meets this interesting group of people. So,
yes, that came out of, I have a family in Prague, and I have a family member who worked for a while at the Lobkowitz Palace. And she said, you know, this is really an amazing place that no one knows about. So when we read about it and started working on the book, we hadn't even visited the Lobkowitz Palace Museum yet. But we were really intrigued about the idea of a group of academics getting together with all of this stuff that had been lost for, you know, 50 years and was just being dusted off and categorized and put on display. It seemed like a lot of fun.
And Sarah is a Beethoven scholar. And one of the things I enjoyed was learning more about Beethoven along the way. Which one of you has the musical background?
We're both experts in all fields that we talk about in the book. No, we are, you know, we're nerds. So for us to research is a joy. And we both read a lot of books about Beethoven and the particular parts of history that are involved in the book. And we had a lot of fun sort of teasing out what history, what things surprised us about these real historical characters and making things come alive in that sense. So that was a real joy. We're neither of us historians nor musicologists.
Interesting, because I wanted to play some Beethoven as I was reading it, because it seemed to me that there were certain pieces of music that expressed a feeling. For instance, this young girl plays the Sonata number 23 in F minor. Tell me about the choice of that particular piece of music.
I was going to say that some of the choices came out of a little classical music concert series here, as improbable as it sounds, in my tiny town of 2,000 people. And we have a group that comes up from the Colburn School of Music. And so I was listening to these fantastic child prodigies play these beautiful pieces. So in some cases, it came from that. And in others, just from listening to the music and trying to decide, you know, even just in terms of, you know, a piano, who's in the room, a piano, a violin, that sort of thing.
The setting of Prague is really wonderfully creepy, and you make it feel wonderfully creepy. How did both of you go to Prague?
We did. We both went together.
So tell us more about what it's like.
Well, Chris had been to Prague before. It was my first time in the city. And we, you know, we run around like maniacs on these research trips that we do. It's really fun and exhausting and great. And Prague is such a remarkable city, and there's a very strong sense of history bumping up right against the present in that city that we just found so magical and intriguing.
Ah, So thus the character's ability to travel back and forth in time. I had the feeling when I started to read the book that we were going in some supernatural direction, but I have to say that became rather mysterious, whether it was really happening or it was an illusion.
That's been interesting in talking about the book, because it's referred to as a paranormal novel, but in our minds, Tycho Brahe discovered this ancient formula for a drug, and it expands the senses. And if you think about it, you know, we see on the visible spectrum and we hear on the audible spectrum, but we know that there's an enormous wavelength of light and sound beyond what we can perceive. So we imagined a drug that would allow you to see. And then when we thought, well, what would you see? Well, of course, you would see everything that ever happened in the place where you were standing. So it isn't really paranormal. It's faux scientific, I think.
we both love reading and researching science. And so I think we were more attracted to a kind of crazy brain aspect rather than a paranormal approach or sort of sci-fi time travel or, you know, ghosts per se. It was more about perception and what our brains are capable of doing under certain circumstances.
So I see it's a book that's going to be hard to classify. So here you are, two authors, and then you have an editor come in to shape or help you finish shaping the book. What was that whole process like?
Well, before we submitted it to an editor, we spent a good couple of months working on the book. Once we knew what we had, then we started just taking a step back, really examining it. And that's chapters got moved around, voices got combined, things got rewritten. And so that was a big process in itself before we even submitted it to someone.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. I think a really interesting aspect of being two authors was that, I mean, we'd have to ask Carolyn at Penguin, but I'd say we made her job easier because there was always an extra set of eyes on every draft. So I would say we did more revisions even than Penguin asked for, just because each time we read it, there were two of us and we saw it with fresh eyes. And, you know, we came at it with two brains. So we were probably pretty serious editors of our own work.
Well, great. It's been really fun talking to you. Thanks for joining us. We'll be talking again on October 3rd when we do the online chat with the participants in the Penguin First Flight program. And I look forward to talking to you more.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this podcast. And please come back on October 3rd for an online chat with Meg and Christina.